Hello, my name is Judy Madryn, and this is the second part of a sound portrait of New Haven Guest House on the River in Stratford. Laura Pogson is the storyteller and host. Since 1953, New Haven has become home away from home for many people who come year after year to enjoy Laura's hospitality and the wonderful comfort and situation of New Haven. Laura's parents, Hady and Edward Smith, welcomed the first theater guests with the launch of the Stratford Shakespearean Festival in 1953. Laura was just 10 then, but as she grew up, she pitched in to help at home and also served meals at Knox Presbyterian to theatergoers. Her parents passed New Haven on to her in 1988. Since then, Laura has enjoyed welcoming guests every year. It's Wednesday, February 1st, 2017, and Laura and I are comfortably seated in the living room, ready to unfold the next chapters of the history of 344 William Street. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Judy.
Well, when we left New Haven's story last time, I asked you if you ever thought you would be the host here. And you answered that in the 1970s, when your parents wondered if you would be interested someday in running New Haven, you could easily see it as a retirement project. But when you were a teenager, like most of your friends, you couldn't wait to get out of Stratford.
That's true, Judy. We all felt the same way. Now, of course, everyone wants to live in Stratford, including me. I think it is a true privilege to live in my childhood home, open it to guests, and be a part of the whole Stratford scene.
Well, why don't we start back with you as a teenager thinking, I'm out of here. Tell me what you learned about your own talents and your own ambitions then when you were in high school.
I started figure skating. I well remember at the Allman Arena across the river. I walked across the river with my skate bag. And I well remember getting on the ice and telling everybody not to touch me because I didn't want to fall over. But I quickly took to figure skating and I thoroughly loved it. And so I spent every opportunity I could on the ice and of course entered the competitions that were available at that time. My mother would drive me for a weekend competition and so on. And that was, I would say, the biggest focus.
Your parents were interested in you skating because you loved it, but they really didn't want to encourage it as a life plan.
No, they did not see it as a career for certain.
But you did, in fact, continue to use your skills.
I did, Judy. That was amazing. I went into coaching and had, some 20 years of coaching young skaters, the power skating for hockey, the precision teams, and of course, taking young skaters into competitions. And I also took a term serving on the National Coaches Board. And for that, I had to travel into Toronto. But that was a great experience for my life.
So once again, as a teenager, you might not have envisioned yourself as a coach, but that's what happened, and it looks like you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. I loved it.
True. Now, in those years when your parents were running New Haven and you were working in the summers serving meals, did you also attend the plays?
Yes. I well remember how exciting the first opening night was. And the adults were all getting spruced up in their finery. In those days, ladies wore long dresses and gloves above the elbow. And I, at 10 years of age, was very put out because I was not included in any of this. And so I was lamenting to my brothers who were hired as ushers. And they told me that if I waited till everyone got in, and I was there at the edge of the tent, they would lift the flap of the tent and let me in. And so I sat on the steps of aisle 6 and watched Alec Guinness come out with Richard III. That was the opening night. And I remember the lines, "Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious by this son of York." Now, at 10 years of age, I did not understand the play. But what I remember was the uproar of the audience, and I knew something very special had happened in Stratford.
And what about the Permanent Theatre? When was that?
The Permanent Theatre was built for the 1957 opening night with Hamlet and Christopher Plummer playing Hamlet. And of course, we were all very excited with that because prior to that, we suffered in the tent with no air conditioning. We sat on stacking chairs, and if it was raining, the tent leaked, so many of the audience would put up an umbrella. And of course, I wonder now how the audience didn't protest, because it would block their view, of course. And then, of course, there's the story of the train coming through Stratford, and the railway was close to the festival, and of course, the train would blow its horn at the crossing on Delamere Ave. And people would complain about that. So we invited the president of the CNR to a performance. The train performed in the middle of the performance with the president there, and suddenly the train didn't blow his whistle anymore.
Now, were you at opening night in the Permanent Theatre?
Yes, yes.
So were you snuck in or?
No, I paid for a ticket then. At that time, the highest price ticket was $5 and a rush seat was $1. So I took my hard-earned money and bought myself a rush seat for $1.
Wow. Is there another performance other than that very first one that you saw that just leaps to mind for you?
That's a difficult question, Judy, because each play stands on its own. Each director, each designer, each actor had their own interpretation of these plays. And that is what I came to appreciate about Shakespeare, is how it can be done so differently, so magically, and so impressively.
And when you were a teenager, though, did you have any favorite actors? Did you get to know any of them?
Oh, yes. Well, certainly Douglas Campbell, for sure. And certainly William Shatner was special because he came to have lunch and dinner when Knox Church was serving the meals. Then when I went to work at the Windsor Hotel during my teen years, Robert Goulet, Marcel Marceau, Governor General Vincent Massey all stayed at the hotel. So I had the privilege of looking after them while they were there. And that was special as well, especially Robert Goulet was so handsome. And all my friends were very jealous of me looking after him, even though we were only teens.
Yeah. Now, Desmond Healy was a good friend. He was a designer. Mm-hmm. He came to Stratford in 1957 to work on Hamlet, starring Christopher Plummer. Mm-hmm. Did he stay at New Haven?
No. What the festival was doing was finding places to put actors as well as the artistic community. Because if they were staying for a longer period of time, it made sense that they would have a kitchen and facilities to use to stay. Now the festival actually owns properties in town that they can use to place personnel. And the reason for that is because the landlords didn't really want people coming just for a few weeks or a few months at a time.
So how did you know Desmond Healy?
Well, Desmond and I got together because I was fascinated with his approach to designing. Desmond is very special in that he uses everyday materials, scotch tape, things that you can buy from the dollar store, but he had a magical way of using these materials. And I began to study them because I was backstage and I was at the warehouse involved with these pieces.
Why were you backstage?
Oh, we started to do tours for people backstage. And of course, that became a very significant part of the festival experience. But Desmond and I would talk about his creations. I was fascinated with them. And I asked him, how could he create something so wonderful? And he said, I see it in my mind's eye. In other words, he can see the final product and he can see how using these simple materials can create it. And of course, he had the vision of what it would look like from the audience as well. And so I grew up with all of this fascination around me. When Louis Applebaum stayed with Mother and Dad, I remember watching him in the living room as he was writing the music for Shakespeare's plays.
In this room?
In this room. He wrote the music. But of course, now it's all technology. It's much different.
And he also wrote something that, of course, people hear every performance.
That is one of the most significant things that I think the festival has carried on. And that is what Louis Applebaum wrote as the fanfares, to play prior to the beginning of the performance, to summon the audience into the house. How civil is that, to have music playing by drummers and trumpeters instead of just yelling at the audience, it's time to come in. And so I have a recording of Louis Applebaum's fanfare. And what is very special to me is that that fanfare, as it plays before 2 o'clock and before 8 o'clock, drifts across the river to New Haven. So it's something that has been played for 65 seasons now. And I have enjoyed hearing it come across the river each night or each afternoon.
And did he stay more than once?
Yes, he came several times. And he was, of course, out of Toronto, but he was also developing music in the United States. So he began to search for people to help him. And that is why he brought in Glenn Gould, who also stayed with Mother and Dad.
Now, another person I wanted to ask about, sort of in this period, was in 1962, the actor Joseph Shaw joined the festival to perform Macbeth. And then I also learned he was later the founder of the George Brown Theatre School in Toronto. So quite something.
Yes.
You wrote that he was a surrogate father to you. Talk about that.
Well, Joseph and I and some others began having lunch at the Keystone Alley Cafe. And Joseph, for whatever reason, took an interest in me. I guess he thought I needed some parenting or some guiding. But how I first got to know Joseph was he used to bring his sister, who was in a nursing home here in Stratford, for a drive down to the river. But he would always forget to turn off his car key. So his battery would die. And he would come up to my house, to New Haven, to ask if we could assist him with some battery cables. And so we just began having this great friendship and then started to have lunch together and then started to go to parties together. And he was over, of course, at the house many times and so on. And we just had this great friendship and relationship.
What kind of a man was he?
Oh, a lovely man, lovely. Full of spirit, full of vim and vigor. He had his own opinions and didn't hesitate to share them with us. And we learned much from Joseph just because he was so wise. He was experienced in the festival. He was experienced in acting. Of course, he was away several years while he was with George Brown. And his wife, Mary Savage, also performed here. Yes.
Now, when you graduated from high school, I think that was 1961,
correct?
Right?
Yes.
And you left the Stratford Nest, in a sense. Tell me what happened in terms of education and work.
Well, I began as a teacher in the education system.
Well, you had to go to university.
Yes, and got my background, went to the Stratford Normal School.
So that was Western you went to.
Yes.
Is that right? And then the
Stratford Normal School.
And the Stratford Normal School, the Stratford Teachers College from 1953, is on sort of the property next to the Festival Theater. But it's no longer a teachers' college.
No.
It's being used.
Yes.
For something else.
Yes. The festival uses much of it. For a little while, the museum used the building as well. But the government closed all the normal schools throughout the province. There was one in Toronto, North Bay, London, and so on. So that was all closed.
But you went there.
Yes.
Right? So you lived at home?
I lived at home while I went to the, I lived, of course, in London at the Y in those days. And then I came here to get this teaching degree because I decided I wanted to teach phys ed because I knew how active it would be. And I knew I had such a love for every sport. But I also took courses in what we called special education. And so I qualified in that area.
And what was special education in those days?
Helping children with any sort of disabilities. Well, the classes were called opportunity classes because we were trying to bring these youngsters along the best we could. These were the children that were having trouble learning. Well, then the director that had been brought from England to the Goderich Psychiatric Hospital invited me to come to Goderich to open up an education program for children who were going to be hospitalized at the psychiatric hospital. I learned a lot about how children learn or don't learn, and what interferes with learning. And I did that until the government closed the psychiatric hospitals.
And it seems you also taught English at some point.
Well, from the psychiatric hospital, my former husband and I moved to Chesley, Ontario. He had also been hired by the psychiatric hospital, but then he was hired by the Bruce County School Board, as was I, to teach at the local high school. So that gave me the opportunity to teach not only phys ed, but they gave me English, so that meant Shakespeare. And of course, that totally delighted me because I had grown up going to Shakespeare plays. I didn't have that stuffy view of reading Shakespeare or memorizing Shakespeare. I had experienced live Shakespeare. So I brought the enthusiasm that I had for Shakespeare into the classroom. Well, in Chesley, which was mainly a rural area.
And where is Chesley?
Chesley is just north of Hanover and south of Owen Sound. I loved the idea of being in the high school and bringing Shakespeare to it. And of course, I had the opportunity to arrange bus tours for the students to come to Stratford. So here I am with all this enthusiasm. And I have to concede that the students weren't quite as thrilled about Shakespeare as I was. And some of those young lads would look at me as I was trying to get them to memorize "The quality of mercy is not strained." And then they would say, "You know, I've been up all night with a sick cow. I really don't feel like memorizing this." And I appreciated their honesty, to tell you the truth. But I had to adjust my enthusiasm a little bit for Shakespeare at that time.
Now, you mentioned your former husband. You married Alan Pogson in 1964.
Yes.
And then went to Chesley a few years later. And then where?
We were in Chesley for 18 years. And after my second child was born, that's when I determined I should really be at home with the children. And that was when I turned back to my interest in figure skating and was seeking some work as a judge. I thought that would be a good part-time. And then, of course, it evolved into full-time coaching. And there I was, I think, working about 7 days a week sometimes.
And were you still involved in New Haven at all through those years?
Only because my parents were here, and I would be coming, of course, and staying when I could, and seeing the plays, and all of that was my involvement. And of course, as mother and dad were aging, I became more and more involved in their life. And finally, I gave up the figure skating in order to assist them at the house here.
So from 1965 to 1976, you added three children to your family. And I guess Andrea, Christopher and Andrew were very familiar with New Haven too, if you're visiting.
Yes.
You told me a story the last time I was here that was kind of fun. And I don't know when this happened, but about the boys being out on their bikes and they saw some famous people. Tell me that one again.
Yes. One day, Christopher and Andrew came riding home on their bikes and told me that they had just seen Lonnie Anderson and Burt Reynolds coming out of the church restaurant. And I simply replied, "Oh, yes." And they said, "Oh, no, Mom, we're telling you the truth." I said, "Oh, I believe you." And they said, "Well, what are they doing here?" And I said, "Well, they've come to see their colleagues in the plays." From then on, this entire town and its festival took on a new meaning to these boys.
So when you did move to Stratford to run New Haven, how many of them were at home at that point?
Well, we purchased an apartment building just down the street from Mother and Dad. Why? Because my mother made it very clear that the kitchen here was only big enough for one woman. And in other words, she did not want me coming in and taking over from her while she felt very competent to run her house the way she wanted to run it. So we had an apartment down the street and the children were there for a while too. And then, of course, we knew that we were going to be eventually moving into New Haven. And that did happen, of course, with the death of my father and then my mother eventually going into a nursing home. And so we came to the house. It was transferred by...
This is 1988?
Yes. And we did some renovations because I felt as though I was in my parents' home. And I knew I had to move on and make it something new. So I did some renovations, and then that's when the New Haven name was christened. Prior to that, people weren't naming their places as much as they do today, although I'm fully aware that in England, they always have names for their homes and their businesses. But here, we didn't so much. But it was becoming more formalized here in Stratford. It was no longer just having theater guests or just a B&B. And so I called it New Haven to psychologically move on. I thought, I have to make it something new for my parents, even though there were still people coming who knew my parents, and I remembered them, of course.
And had the number of guests stayed the same over the years?
When Mother and Dad were aging, they were narrowing it down to people that they best knew. Although the festival at that time was very involved, and I still have the festival involved. They still send guests to me. But Mother and Dad were taking it much easier. I marvel when I think of how my mother ironed the sheets, because in those days they were all cotton, but she also had a wringer washer. She also went from upstairs with the laundry to the basement to washing it to the outdoor clothesline and then back to the basement to iron. At this time, she was also cooking the roast beef every day at the church for the meals.
So she was quite a powerhouse. I wonder where you get that from.
I think it came naturally, just watching her and being involved. But remember, she also raised three boys.
Did your parents ever have any horrifying incidents of guests?
I have no knowledge of that. And I think had they had such an experience, it would never have been expressed or shared. That was the style in those days. People did not bring forth any negative things. What is particular to know, though, that my mother did say she never lost so much as a towel in all the years. Because that's a question that some people would ask. Aren't you worried about having strangers come into your home? They had absolutely no fear of that whatsoever.
So it was a good thing for them. They enjoyed it the whole time.
It was an amazing thing for them because my father retired from the Bell Telephone in 1961. So he was available and he was forever taking the guests out for his garden tours because he gardened the entire lot beside the house. We grew our own vegetables. He grew enormous dahlias. And the guests would enjoy the garden as much as the indoors that Mother looked after.
And you said that your mother was a really fine cook. What would she offer for breakfast?
Well, in those days, at first, the homes that opened, they weren't offering breakfast. People would be struggling to find a restaurant to go to. So Mother caught on quickly to this, and she would say to the guests, I'm putting on coffee for my husband. Could I give you some coffee? And then she started saying, well, we have a patch of raspberries in the backyard, so would you like some cornflakes and raspberries? And then she started cooking some eggs for them. And it was an evolution of the whole idea of having breakfast along with having a room. It was never labeled bed and breakfast. I never heard my parents call it that.
And would what she offered be different from what you offer now?
Absolutely, Judy. Now, of course, B&Bs are very much in demand. That's where people want to stay. But they have a lot bigger expectations of the experience. So I have a repertoire of about 17 different recipes. And I rotate them so that if someone's staying 5 or 6 nights, they never have the same breakfast, of course. Now, I don't worry if they come back the next year, they might have a repeat. In fact, they even ask. We are having the French toast, aren't we, Laura? And so they enjoy experiencing those recipes over and over.
And you know them so well, you don't need recipes anymore.
That's true. I can do it without the book anymore.
Tell me about your decision to take on New Haven. They asked you in the 70s.
Yes. And the idea was that they wanted to keep the house in the family if they could. So when they approached me, they made it very clear that they had already asked my three older brothers first. So I felt comfortable saying yes. My three brothers had gone off to school and had married and lived outside of Stratford. But I had maintained my connection with friends here and with the house and with Mother and Dad much closer than what my brothers had. And of course, I'd maintained the connection with the theater as well, and I was very interested in it. So it wasn't a hard decision, because I knew that I couldn't stay with the figure skating into my senior years. Much as I loved the figure skating, it's long hours, cold hours, sometimes being on the ice at 6 a.m., 10 o'clock at night, and so on. So in a way, it was an easy transition to think that I could be back in my childhood home, welcoming guests, because I enjoyed the experience with my parents. I remember the laughter that came from Barbara Hamilton. She was working with Spring Thaw and many other things in Toronto. But I remember how these walls were filled with her laughter. And I remember how much the guests enjoyed the experience. So for me, it wasn't like work or a job. It was going to be a lifestyle.
So they asked you and you said, yes, I'd be interested. And then it was their timing. And
yes.
Your dad died and your mom saying, yes. Okay, I've done. When you took over, did you have sort of an agreement of how you would run it, or was just understood that you knew how to do it?
My mother was so good. She never told me once how I should go about it. I thought that was a wonderful thing that I had learned from her. And I realize now that I am doing things much as she did them, because that's how I learned. But I thought it was special that she didn't try to tell me how to do it.
That's big trust.
Yes.
Yeah. And when you came here, you had one or two children to house as well when you moved
yes.
here.
Yes. Well, we were had the apartment building because we owned it. We had an apartment and the children had an apartment. So that worked very well. And so that was why I was able to transition. I did have the boys in a room for a while here, but Andrea had, by this time, she had moved on to university and she was developing her own path. And so she did not actually live here, although she spent much time here with her grandparents and so on. And then the boys gradually enjoyed the apartment, so they were quite happy to let me have the final room to use for B&B. So that's how it was, sort of a transition, Judy, that just seemed to come together.
Do you have
so
a memory
naturally.
Of your first official guests or a story from that
well,
time?
I would say the guests that I remember were Mr. and Mrs. Levy from Michigan, who had developed a long-standing friendship with my parents. They even brought their children, who at the time when they started coming needed babysitting. So of course my mother babysat them. But then they ended up coming with their spouses and children. That's how long that association went on. And in fact, the Levies even went to our family cottage with my parents. It just became a friendship. So yes, definitely the Levies. And I remember sharing with them some of my mother's silverware because they remembered it. And I just gave it to them because I remember the friendship they had, and I thought it would be lovely for them to have a memento of my parents.
Well, tell me about Musia and Leon Schwartz. They were guests, friends of the Canadian poet Irving Layton and Leonard Cohen. Tell me about
yes.
them.
They were so delightful. And what's happened now, just recently, Leon passed away. And Musia has not been able to bring herself to come without Leon. But for many, many years, they came because they were so well-versed with theater all over the world. And Musia knew her Shakespeare, and she gave me such a commentary on every play that she saw here. And Leon was the most gracious gentleman. He looked after her, drove her everywhere, went to every play with her, and we had the most sparkling conversation at the breakfast table about the plays. And that is one of the things that I feel enriches my life, is to hear how other people are experiencing the same plays that I'm going to.
Leonard Cohen ever come?
Leonard Cohen never came. And I was just talking to Musha because, of course, he's passed away now. And so she was talking about him and how some of the struggles that he had during his lifetime. But each year they would come, they would bring me up to date on what Irving Layton and Leonard were doing. So I feel I know these men just because of them. And that is what I really cherish about the B&B, is I learned so much about the world at my doorstep.
Tell me about one of your most loyal guests. Perhaps she's the eldest guest, Frances Allais, the poet and author. I was reading she wrote Seasons, Voices, and another book called Mark. Is she still coming as a guest?
Last year, which would have been the 64th season, was the first season she had to miss. Why? Because the doctor told her there was something going on with her leg, and he didn't think it was wise for her to be driving a car from Albany, New York. And of course, we spent much time on the phone talking. But she's talking as though she's going to come this year, which will mean that she's 96. So 2 years ago, I phoned over to the festival and I said to David Prosser, our literary manager, that he should be doing an article on Frances because she was a scholar and a teacher, a professor of Shakespeare. So of course she knew the plays and I valued her perspectives all these years. But what was amazing was her mind and her memory way on in her 90s and even today is so keen. And when she would come to the breakfast table and guests would be meeting her for the first time, they pondered over her and thought, well, we must fill this lady in on some commentary on the plays. But Frances, when she spoke, remembered when Brian Bedford played something in the 80s and so-and-so played something in the 60s. And the guests would end up in awe of this.
They must have enjoyed that.
That was a real treat for me to step back and just watch that. So David did send Hillary from the festival over to do an article on Frances, and they did put it in the Fanfares magazine. Frances wasn't the least bit moved by it at all. It didn't faze her at all to know that her story was being spread through Fanfares. But I told her that it is a story worth telling.
Now, we spoke earlier of Glenn Gould and Terry O'Donnell, a professor of theater and music in San Diego, right? He was a great fan of
yes.
Gould, and he was a guest.
Yes. Terry has come for, I would say, at least 20 years. Terry was the dean of music at San Diego University and has worked at La Jolla Playhouse as well with Des McAnuff, who was our artistic director, and many others, of course, in the field of music. And Terry O'Donnell went to the play Glenn that we did several years ago. And he told me that he had to walk an hour and a half in the park. He was weeping so profusely because it was such a brilliant production of the four personalities of Glenn Gould from his youth to his adulthood. And he told me that he plays Glenn Gould's music in his class and of course teaches his students about Glenn Gould. So he has a great appreciation, of course, for Glenn Gould. And he was here last year and he'll be coming this year and takes in everything that he can.
You know, I can see how you'd be glad to have a rest But I also see that you can probably hardly wait for your guests to come back.
It's with great anticipation, Judy, that I get now, of course, it's emails as well as phone calls. But I love to open my emails and see a familiar guest requesting time to be at New Haven.
You described earlier your father's love of gardening. And I wonder, do you love it too?
Honestly, yes and no. Yes, because I love to be out there digging in the soil and puttering around. No, because I don't have the knowledge that my father has. I don't have the time that my father has. I now really appreciate how he dug the garden, planted it, maintained it, and brought in the flowers to the house and to the church to decorate the tables when the ladies were serving at the church. And now, because I'm fully in charge of the bed and breakfast operation, I don't have the time to spend at the garden. So I get help to do the gardening now, but I am involved with it.
And you were also connected with a former head gardener of the festival.
Yeah.
Harry Youngerden.
Correct. Harry and I became good friends because I wanted to learn from Harry. So I would spend whatever time I could chatting with him and asking him questions about gardening, asking him about the soil in this area, asking him, oh, how should I plant something or what will thrive in this area? Because Harry had a wealth of knowledge. And when he would share with me, I would say to him, you know, Harry, you should put this in a book. And he has done that. And in the book, he says, Laura Pogson told me that I should put this in a book.
And just, so we just have, for the moment, the book was published in 2002, This Other Eden, The Gardens of the Stratford Festival. Yes.
And it's available, of course, in the festival bookshop. And I did for a time. I tried to do garden tours for the festival because I felt that was a way I would learn more. And I did learn so much more by doing the tours and, of course, would take the opportunity to talk to Harry on my way through. And then I realized this can't work. The garden tours are in the morning and I cannot break away in the morning. So I gave that up.
And will you show me the book?
Yes, I will indeed.
Now, a regular guest, another regular guest, Maggie Siggins. She's a Canadian author, 12 books. Tell me about Maggie.
Maggie is just a delight. She comes every year with her husband, Gerald Sperling, who is a film director. They lived in Regina for many years and have now moved to Toronto. So it makes the trip to Stratford a little easier. They come with their cousin and a group of teachers from Ottawa, and this place is rollicking with all these people. And Maggie will tell us tales of how she's coming along with her writing and what the next book is and her adventures in the north. They have a cottage in the far north, and I mean the far north. And so she does much of her writing up there at the cottage, because of course it's quiet and serene.
Now, she's a Governor General Award winner.
She is. And she was very involved with the Colin Thatcher affair. And she wrote a book. So I have many of Maggie's books and many of her tales. And it's just a wonderful 8 days that we all have together. We go out for dinner. They have dinner here. We drink wine together.
I'm amazed your brain doesn't explode with all of this wonderful learning.
I think that is what I thrive on, Judy, is that the people who come with all their worldly knowledge inspires me. And even though I have not been a part of their world, I love to hear the stories that other people have. And it gives me energy, actually.
I have one other that I wanted to ask you about. Tell me about Carolyn Skay. She's an artist in mixed media. Tell me about her.
Last summer, 2016, was her first visit to Stratford, because the museum here was doing an exhibit of art quilts. And she was one of the exhibitors. So she came to stay with me. And when she arrived, I asked her, I didn't know that she was an exhibitor. And so I asked her what plays she would be going to. And she told me, well, I've really come all the way from Texas because I'm an exhibitor at the show. Well, I had a wonderful opportunity to connect with her because she didn't have a car. So I drove her, of course, out to the museum when she wanted to be there. And then we would have lunch together so I could ask her questions away from the breakfast table. And then when she went back home, she made an art quilt for me for New Haven. And I just found that such a beautiful connection, that she would take the time after going home to do one for me. And in it are a row of houses. And of course, my house is one, New Haven. And I think that is really, really special. So Carolyn and I had that opportunity. And I learned all about art quilts, something I hadn't known about.
It was a wonderful exhibition. I went and saw it. Yes. How neat. How neat.
Well, I had a second exhibitor come as well. Her and her husband came. And of course, I was able to connect with them as well. And then I had a guest. I, of course, all summer long, I was sending guests out to this exhibit because I was enthralled with it. And I had a guest buy two pieces to take back to Michigan.
Laura, you told me on one of our visits together about walking along the Avon with Canadian author Robertson Davies and how American actor Paul Newman came to Stratford. You've mentioned many well-known people, but famous people didn't and don't overwhelm you. Tell me a bit about that.
I was so young when the festival started that it, I think, became just natural for me after a while. I remember James Mason came, and his car was a bright color, and we'd never seen a car, a salmon pink, I believe it was called. But we wanted at the same time to make him feel welcome and a part of our community. So we never went near these people to fuss over them the way some people stand at a stage door and get autographs and so on of people. It seemed to be very important for Stratford to be inclusive of these people rather than to be bothering them when they were trying to just go about their day. And so always I have looked upon the actors and the people that come as just simply people doing their job. That's what they do for a living. And it never became a celebrity thing for me because I was never exposed to New York celebrity or certainly not Hollywood celebrity. Well, of course, now I have a much greater appreciation.
So your approach was actually of respect for them, not making them stay on the pedestal and perform. So respect for them as people and allowing them to relax. But you had your ears wide open.
Yes. Yes. Because I was fascinated. Life here in Stratford was quite quiet. My parents lived a very quiet life. A trip to Toronto to visit relatives took most of the day. I didn't have exposure to the outside world. And it was 1958 when we put a television in this house. So I didn't have the sense of celebrity, and I certainly didn't feel it was necessary to worship them or adore them.
But what was your line too about they bring the world to you, or what is it that
yes.
you say?
I say that the world comes to my door through the festival here and the opportunity to open the home to the people who come to the festival is how I experience the rest of the world. And that for me is a great joy and a privilege to be able to have that firsthand connection.
Well, thank you, Laura. I would like to conclude with some quick questions, quick answers. Okay. So these should just be yes or no, or a name, or a short story. When can't you resist getting into a conversation? I'm thinking you...
Never. I am always looking for conversation.
Not just listening, then. You like talking. What's the first thing you do at the end of the season?
Take a holiday.
The same place?
No, I usually just find somewhere to go for a few days just to distract me. I might go on a cruise, which I did one year. I might just go to the cottage and rest.
Why do you list duck sitting on your resume?
Son Andrew, who has developed an international career as a science magic magician, started using a white Peking duck in his shows. Originally, he had tried using doves, but doves are very fragile and don't travel well. So he didn't want to be the rabbit in the hat type of magician. So he was able to get a young duck from a farmer. But occasionally, Andrew goes to a conference or to meetings. So he has left the duck in my care. So I have many stories to tell about duck sitting. That is a fun part of my life.
And does the duck have a favorite bedroom?
He sleeps in the garage in the summer and the basement in the winter and the outdoors in the summertime.
What advice would you give to someone opening a guest house?
Be prepared to devote your time.
And do you ever have to wake your guests up?
No. I arrange for the time of breakfast when they arrive. I get that all set up as a suitable time. And I try to be lenient. I say, is that too early or is that too late?
So you don't play music or anything at any time?
I do have the music on.
Okay.
And it does drift through the house, so.
This might be a bit longer answer. The Stratford Festival was actually a great experiment in 1953, a great risk 65 years ago. Why is it still working?
The dedication of the people. It started on very strong, a strong foundation. That is, Dr. Guthrie and Tanya Mazayevich knew theater and they knew how to go about it. They knew how to use the dollar wisely and they wouldn't take anything less than excellence. And I believe that foundation has been maintained and implemented.
In, I would say, a very friendly town.
Yes, for sure. The town quickly realized the value of the festival because we had wonderful shopping here. And the American visitors who love Shakespeare loved the English flavor. Tea with mother and dad in the afternoon was always my mother and dad had 5 o'clock tea. And they loved to go to the china shop and the woolen shop. And my father would watch them loading up their cars, with the shopping, and he claimed it was the friendly store clerks and the shopping combined with Shakespeare that drew the American people here.
And people like you who open their homes.
Yes.
Well, you have some pretty wonderful stories, Laura. I know there are many more. We have another chance coming. Next time we're going to explore some of your memorabilia. There is lots more to talk about. Thank you. This is part two of A Sound Portrait of New Haven Guest House with Laura Pogson. I'm Judy Madryn.
The night is young, the skies are clear, and if you wanna go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. I understand the reason why you're sentimental, 'cause so am I. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go, so please be sweet, my chickadee. And when I kiss you, just say to me, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma, it's delimit, it's deluxe, it's delovely.
I feel a sudden urge to sing the kind of ditty that invokes the spring.
I'll control my desire to curse while you crucify the verse.
The verse I've started seems to me the tin pan antithesis of melody.
So spare us all the pain, just skip the darn thing and sing the refrain.
Me, 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 re, 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 do, sol, mi, do, la, si. The night is young, the skies are clear, and if you want to go walking, dear, it's delightful, it's delicious, it's still lovely. The reason why you're sentimental, 'cause so am I. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's still lovely. You can tell at a glance what a swell night this is for romance. You can hear dear Mother Nature murmuring low, let yourself go.
No, let yourself go. So please be sweet, my chickadee. It's delightful, it's delicious, it's delectable, it's delirious, it's dilemma,
it's delimit,
it's deluxe, it's deluxe.